going to Live Dharma Sunday for January 17th, 2016. Koyo Kubose here. So very glad you joined us. We get nice communications through the internet, through our email attachments and whatnot, and I subscribe to this email service. It's called Daily Om, and they have all kind of nice messages. And recently, they had one on gratitude. I thought it was really nice, Being Truly Thankful by Madison Taylor. She's one of the founders, I guess, of this service. And I'd like to share it with you, and I'm just going to quote it, read it. Often, when we practice being thankful, we go through the process of counting our blessings, acknowledging the wonderful people, things, and places that are in our lives. And while it is fine to be thankful for the good fortune we have accumulated, true thankfulness stems from a powerful togetherness with just the gift of simply being alive. And when we experience that, we do so regardless of our circumstances. This is a very deep state of gratitude. It's where you sort of recognize the purity of the experience of being in and of itself. And our thankfulness is part and parcel of our awareness that we're flowing with the dynamic reality and the great mystery of life itself. It is often difficult for most of us to feel this kind of gratitude or level of consciousness because we're always caught up in the ups and downs of our individual life. But the thing to remember about our life in this world is that although there's ups and downs, ebbs and flows, expanding, contracting, giving and taking, but by its very nature, it's not really reliable. It's rather unpredictable. If you only feel gratitude when it serves our desires, this is not true thankfulness, because no one is exempt from the twists and turns of fate, which at any time could take our possessions, change our situations, it could take our people that we love away from us. Ironically, it is sometimes this very kind of loss that awakens us to a thankfulness that goes deeper than just being grateful when things go our way. Sometimes illness and near-miss accidents can also serve as kind of a wake-up call to the deeper realization that we're just fortunate to be alive. We do not have to wait to be shaken to experience this state of being truly thankful for life itself. Just tune into your breath. Sit calmly once in a while. Take a pause and just make an effort to be fully present. When you get up in the morning and greet the day, this can do wonders for our ability to connect with true gratitude. And we can also awaken ourselves with the intention to be more aware of the unconditional generosity of the life force that flows through us, regardless of our circumstances. That ends the article. I couldn't help but thinking that last sentence, conditional generosity of the life force that flows through us, regardless of circumstances. That word force is a real buzzword nowadays. Adrian and I went to see Star Wars recently, and so I couldn't help adding, I wrote right there at the end of this article, and may the force be with you. Well, sorry. Okay. I want to introduce our guest who's going to give us a Dharma glimpse today, Clarence Sun, and he's from Florida, and he's part of our Lay Minister 8 group, very nice group. And I have unmuted him as he's called in live. And so, Clarence Sun.
Thank you. Toyo Sensei, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for listening to the broadcast. One of the nice things about being on the east coast of Central Florida is I'm within a very reasonable driving distance of the Kennedy Space Center. That's the place where America's space program, the launches for the Apollo space or the moon landings and the space shuttle program were. And being around and growing up in this area, there's a huge presence of the aerospace industry here. We have a couple of airports and lots of contractors, you know, in the aerospace and defense markets. And we have a couple of air shows every year at the local airports, and the bigger one being at the Melbourne International Airport here. And this past year, it was a real treat because I live only a couple miles away from the airport, and the building I work in is only about a mile, maybe just a little less than a mile away from the airport. So when the air shows come every year, it's always a treat because I get to see all these vintage aircraft flying around and coming in for the show, and the military aircraft flying around, and get to watch for the air show, the actual flying exhibitions I'm practicing and doing, and I can pretty much do all that from my front yard. And this past year, last year, with the headlining act for the flying demonstrations was the Navy's Blue Angels, their precision flying team. And if you've ever seen them, it's just absolutely breathtaking. The precision and control they have over their aircraft is just absolutely remarkable. And I could sit and two days in a row on a weekend in the front porch and actually watch their show just as well as if I had actually paid for the tickets to go and go to the air show itself. But I live so close, and it was just amazing watching these pilots and what they can do with these multi-million-dollar aircraft. Just the such close formation and precision flying, and being wingtips within feet of each other. It's just remarkable what they can do, and it was thrilling to watch. And I started wondering. I've said in this area, you're around the aerospace industry. I've known some private pilots. My stepfather had a private pilot's license. A good friend of mine's dad did. Another friend of mine took flying lessons. So I've got a bit of a layman's knowledge of what it takes, at least, you know, the amount of preparation and training just to learn to fly a simple single-engine plane from point A to point B in a straight line, and that's a lot of training and practice involved with that. Just how much more, I wondered, for these precision fighter pilots to do these very death-defying moves. And it turns out you have to have about a minimum of 1,300 hours of flying experience in that type of aircraft. So on top of what they do, becoming a Navy officer and becoming a qualified pilot, and on top of that, becoming a fighter pilot and having all that experience, and then getting selected for the team and the training and learning the maneuvers before they even get a chance to be a support person on the flying team is just amazing. And how much time, effort, and discipline and practice it takes to do something like that. And that's the I thought, and being the occupational hazard of a Bright Dawn LM student, I'm wondering, where's the teaching in this and in all of this? And it struck me that the idea of preparation and practice, and this same thing holds true whether you're learning to be a stunt pilot, whether you're learning to play tennis, learn to improve your golf swing, or anything you do in life, it takes preparation and practice. And we go about our lives taking classes and preparing and training for all sorts of things. We go to colleges and trade schools to learn how to do things to get a good job. We'll take lessons to improve our golf swing, or learn judo, or learn to play the piano, or play tennis, or any number of things. But how often do we actually practice and prepare for just everyday life? Yeah, so often with many people, it's just, and I know with me in the past, it's just been very haphazard. You just kind of learn by exploring and doing and trial and error. And even those of us who have a religious or spiritual affiliation kind of sometimes just go through emotions by showing up in a church or a temple or a synagogue, listening to a sermon or a Dharma talk, and without actually really a method of practice to put these things really into our lives. So we put all our time and efforts into learning how to do great things. How often do we always stop and reflect on what we need to do to learn to just get better at the skill of living life and living a life that's freer and more open and compassionate. And that's one of the great things about the Dharma, because it gives us these tools, these practices, these things we can do to learn and dedicate ourselves. But often the difference between a person with just a simple private pilot's license is involved as it is to get that, and the skilled aerobatic stunt pilot is just practice. We tend to want to look at people who accomplish great things or show great skills, like the stunt pilot or the professional musician or the professional athletes, people who get a high level of skill in what they do, and we tend to think of that somehow that person is just special. There's something better about them than ourselves or the rest of us. And having met professional musicians and professional athletes and the occasional celebrity, I've found that that's not really the case. There really isn't anything more special about them than anyone else. And the same thing with the great spiritual teachers. And we think that there's something better about them than there are about ourselves. And I found that's not necessarily the case either. Big difference between those people we look up to and admire for their skill and their commitment, and the difference between them and the rest of us is just how much effort and practice they've put into doing what they do. It's like the old joke about how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. And reminds me of something that Toyo-sensei very frequently says is just keep going. And that's the key. That's the great secret to the universe, I think, is to keep going and not give up, even when things don't go our way, even when things are difficult. Even our spiritual practice is the difference between excellence and simply getting by is just never giving up. Some people may have an easier time than others in some things, and then you'll turn around and do something better than someone else. We all have our gifts and our potentials. But the big thing is just keep practicing and keep going. That's the difference between the expert and the layperson, is just not giving up and continuing to practice. So thank you, everybody, for listening to me this week. Go back to Toyo-sensei.
Yeah, thank you very much. As I was listening, it reminded me of Edison, Thomas Edison. His quote was, you know, genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. and he worked hard. It's just not like, it wasn't just easy to invent something, get a brilliant idea, and figure out, you know, if it really works. And in fact, sometimes he's working on a problem, and he had to go down several hundred dead ends. And a friend said, you know, it took him 100 failures, then he hit upon the correct solution. And a friend said, gee, too bad you didn't try that one, you know, right away. And you wasted all this time with all those hundreds of failures. And Edison right away said, no, I know several hundred ways that don't work. He never saw anything as wasted. And really, I'm going to say deep, but when you think about success and failure, my father, Reverend Guillaume Kubo, said, always used to say, failure is the basis of success. You know, so it's not that you succeed in spite of your failures, but because of your failures. This was nowhere pointed out to me. It was one time I was watching the Olympics and the women's 4x100 relay. I guess the prior Olympics, the women's relay team was disqualified because they dropped the baton. So 4 years later, the next women's team, they won the gold medal. And when they're being interviewed, but afterwards, person said, "Boy, they weren't, because of the last Olympics team's experience, this team this year was not going to drop that baton." And right away, I thought, that's a tremendous example of, you know, it's because of that prior team's failure that was part of the current team's win. So I think there's a lot of ways that could be applied. And it's only when we make mistakes that we're shown the way. This is really part of keep going. And when you think about Clarence, I mentioned that Florida and the Kennedy Space Center too, talk about preparation and precision and everything. To put a man up in the moon, that is just incredible. And how much groundwork, how much research, how much trying this and that behind the scenes. All we see is the shuttle taking off. Okay? There's a lot of work behind that. And in fact, some years ago, Adrian and I took a road trip from Chicago and we drove to Florida. And it was a great trip. We went to St. Augustine. We went to Busch Garden, Epcot Center. We went to the Everglades. We went Key West. We drove all the way down. We went to Sanibel Island, picked some seashells up. But we also just happened to stop at the Kennedy Space Center. And you know what? They were having a shuttle launch. And you know what? It was April 8th. And I said, oh, we're very fortunate. They're having a shuttle launch. So we attended, and I didn't know what was involved. And you ride a bus, and they take you to a certain spot, and then you wait there. And because it's not guaranteed that it's going to be that the launch is going to happen. They have what they call a launch window. That if everything is good to go, you know, because there might be one of the check systems or, you know, countdown things or the weather conditions, something might change before launch time. So they're checking everything to make sure everything's a go. And so there's a countdown for the window of a launch, and not just the launch itself, but is all systems go for the launch. So everybody's sitting there because they might say, oh, it's aborted, weather conditions shifted, no launch today. Everyone would be really disappointed. So they're counting down, and then it's a go. Everybody cheers, and now we wait for the launch itself, and boom, to see that thing take off, to see it go up in the sky, get smaller and smaller. I was inspired, and I was inspired that I hope that I was inspired that my spiritual life would take off. Huh? That's what I said. I said, hey, and what kind of preparation and practice does it take to make a launch? Well, for my spiritual life to take off, it's not automatic. Okay? There's a lot involved in that. My own effort. It's no accident that the Buddha was a very pragmatic, practical person. Eightfold Path, right effort. One of the six paramitas, virya, okay? Being vigorous in your actions and so forth. Okay? And a lot of the precepts involving, well, it's a variation of keep going. It's persistence in the face of failure. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining in today. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going. Keep going, yeah. And you have a very beautiful day. Thank you.